But who's counting?
Thank you, Debbie. All right, it's great to be with the dean also.
Yes.
Is it okay if we just, I mean, I know a lot of the people here, but I see some new faces also. Sorry, I know that this is, like, you know, unpleasant, but can people just go around and say their name? Because I'd love to be able to interact here.
Fully pleasant. Arielle Cohen.
You know, you thought you looked familiar.
You're around the block from you, Who else are you around the block from?
Okay.
Well, Bonnie's a couple blocks. Rachel Friedman, and I started on day new. But someone just told me it's the 10th year.
Is that? Oh, my
10th summer? Is that correct?
10th summer.
Oh, my
someone
God.
In the previous class just said that.
Okay.
Wonderful.
We have a...
Yashikala.
Beautiful.
And we had a pandemic in between, so...
I heard about
that. We do
that.
Our best.
Jerry Bergman.
Okay, it's great to be with you, Jerry. Who's next?
Where are you from, Jerry? You're Elizabeth, you said.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Miriam doesn't hear.
Miriam, you're next.
You have to introduce.
We're just going to introduce ourselves. Just, it's okay.
We're
I don't
just
know.
Saying that. We're just. Cat. Yeah. We just want to say.
I hear Robert Freeman as a colil, and I'm glad to be here.
Bonnie
as a
colil,
so
I
would
like to
see that. Hi,
Bonnie. Elisa
Froelich. I'm Ruthie Froelich, her daughter and her granddaughter.
Three generations. So this is my other, the other side.
No,
you know, the Roth class. This
would
is the Froelich.
Too, except that she's in a different country.
She's abroad.
We take all relatives. And, so it's great to be together. We live here in Teaneck also, and we have 4 kids, and it's great to be here. I guess you could say about keynote.
Wait, sorry, I'm going to
press. Okay, great.
I didn't want to record all the introductions.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. No problem.
Recording in progress.
Yeah.
I just
Hi,
want to
Nikki.
Say Nikki's there too.
Nikki How we waves. Were just introducing everybody at the table. Okay, you're muted, but okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to thank everybody not just for coming out, you know, which is always nice, but you know, like somebody's you know giving a series on keynotes, you know, it's sort of like you know be a little bit depressing, you know. So that's like Tisha B'Av is enough. So that's a very to everybody's credit that they're willing to. Open themselves up, not just to the what I call the depth of keynotes, which is to get into a little bit of these stories, but I actually this may end up being a bridge too far, and we'll see at the end of the series whether people say, oh, that was a good tagline, but it wasn't really true. I actually think that the more you understand them, the less depressing they actually are. A lot of that comes from appreciating the idea that we're going to start to talk about today, that there is obviously a very tragic component to what the keynotes discuss in specific and in aggregate, but much more than that. And it really gives us a sense of, in the end, something extraordinarily beautiful about Jewish life and about Jewish spiritual life in particular. And there's, of course, a kind of dynamic here where the more beauty you can appreciate, the loss of that beauty becomes more painful. But what I really want to focus on is the beauty that is described. Obviously, when you know the end of the story, that makes it a little bit harder to deal with. But it's really important not to see this as just, you know, as they call them in English, dirges. You know, which is, you know, a very unfortunate translation, because they're really lyrically exceptionally beautiful poetry. We'll begin to look at one today, but we'll get there not right away in a little bit, but to appreciate what's being discussed. But to do that, we have to sort of understand the form. In everything in life, there's substance and there's form. Just to give a mashal, one that is, you know, far beyond my wheelhouse, but like if you're serving a meal, right? So there's the actual food that's being served, right? And then there's the presentation. And if you want to be on the, you know, the 5-star list, you know, the presentation counts for a lot. You know, for those of us who, you know, are severely limited in this area of life, we just skip that part and we say, let's make sure that we're not poisoning anybody here. So, you know, there's in life, there's substance and there's form. So when it comes to keynotes, in that balance, the form is as important, sometimes even more important than the substance. So we have to understand a little bit about form in general, to really appreciate what the kinos are. Anybody with a background in poetry will, you know, immediately latch on to these things, but it's not required. We'll explain all of our terms, because a lot of this is really truly exceptionally beautiful, even from the standpoint of form. From the standpoint of, if I could use the term, I mean this in the spiritual sense, but in the sense of art, that the talent that was involved, the Rabbi Soloveitchik famously used to observe that he was an opponent to adding kinos in general, something that we'll talk about for more recent events, and he said that he didn't think that the kind of textual virtuosity that is needed in terms of referencing Tanakh and Chazal and being able to weave it together in such a really a masterful way. We're talking about a level of genius that he felt was sort of beyond the generation. So there is a lot of beauty to appreciate, even at the aesthetic level as well, but it is all meaningful because it serves the purpose. So to really understand the genre, which again we'll get to a little bit today, a couple of things are required, and we'll work together. An appreciation, of course, of Tanakh. That's a big starting point. Appreciation, as I just mentioned, of Chazal, because the authors of Kinos, as we'll see, really, really knew backwards and forwards all of the Midrashim and the Agados regarding their subject matter, and are making certain assumptions about their audience in terms of our awareness and our understanding of what it is that they are alluding to. So, nobody here is required to know any of that, but we'll try to point out how these different threads are really being woven together in an absolutely magnificent way to draw upon the story. So none of the kinos are even remotely possible without an appreciation of what we do here and, you know, studying in depth. There really is a lot of Talmud Torah that's involved. The other piece, which I think probably doesn't get enough attention, is a halachic understanding as well. The halacha has a very particular view on the role of kinos, which we're going to explain today, using, you know, classical halachic sources to understand what the goals are. And this, in turn, goes back to the Chumash itself. I think we all know, or when reminded, we'll quickly realize that the first instance we have of anything like kinos occurs in Sefer Bereishis, in Parshas Chayisara. The Torah tells us that Avram Avinu came, Vayavo Avraham, you have this on the sheet, we'll get there in a second, Lispod l'Sara v'Livkosa, that there's Hesped, and there's Bechia. Those are not the same. They're deeply related terms. And we're going to spend some time talking about what the interrelationship between Hesped, sometimes translated, it's not a perfect translation, eulogy, right? So the idea of being Masped, and also Bechia, of crying. Now, those are, like I say, not the same, but they're very deeply related. So we'll see that everything that we talk about in terms of kinos, as we have it this time of year, coming to its crescendo on Tisha B'Av, is actually rooted in a very specific halachic approach, which we'll get to pretty early on. So let's start with a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is, if those of you who may not be aware, Tinek just appointed a poet laureate. It's first ever poet laureate. Some people may be aware of this. Okay, so Yirmiyahu is like the poet laureate of Churban. I don't know that anybody would want to be, but that was, you know, what was assigned to him. He's the Navi of the Churban in Sefer Yirmiyahu. And, of course, the author of the book that Chazal called Kinos, the book of Eicha. So Yirmiyahu HaNavi is going to be the leading, you know, figure here. So let's begin with the aspect of Bechia, and we'll build up from there. So Yirmiyahu says, "Mi yitain roshi mayim," to literally imagine one's head turning to water, "ve'eini mekor dima," and like to turn my eyes into the sources of tears, "ve'evke yomam valayla eschale basami," that would that I would be able to cry for the victims of my people, a chalal in my Sefer Bamidbar in Parshas Chukas is a corpse. We have that again in Sefer Dvarim in Parshas Shoftim. So Yirmiyahu says there's literally no limit to the amount of bechia that, you know, I could have, and would that it were that I was physically capable of crying 24 hours a day. So Yirmiyahu wants to direct our attention to the value of Bechia within this context. And then again, in Eicha we have, and this is a representative pasuk, but I chose it for a very particular reason amongst other candidates. Kumi roni valaila l'rosh hashmoros shivchi kamayim libeich nochach pnei Hashem si lav kapayich al nefesh olalayich hatufim b'ra'av b'rosh kol chutzos. So literally means get up in the middle of the night. We'll talk about how Chazal understood this in just a moment. And the term in Chumash of vayaronu, like vayarkolam, vayaronu sometimes has a very joyous rina people are aware of. But really, the term itself means to declaim, to have some kind of an emotive reaction. Here, in the simple pshat, of course, it means negatively, right? To have a lamentation. L'rosh hashmoros, shivchi kamayim libeich. Again, to turn one's heart, in this occasion, not just one's head, but one's heart, into mayim, into water, is a reference here to Bechia, in front of God, and to stretch forth one's hands for the souls of the children that died of starvation in the streets. So the Medrash commenting on this pasuk of Kumi Roni Valaila says, this is Yehav in the third source, if you're following inside, Nikki, I hope you can follow as well, it's Lashon Misped, that this is the beginnings of Hesped. Okay, Roni mi Lashon Hesped, L'rosh Hashmoros b'sha'a hashat numa misnodedes b'ibnei adam, when people would start to wake up, this is the end of the night, Shivchi kamayim libeich, L'chein ein tfilaso shaladam nishma, salim kein mesim es libo kamayim. Chazal are understanding that this isn't only relevant for how we want to be maspid, but even how we would want to interact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in tefillah, okay, that it should be with deep emotion. Nochach b'nei Hashem, kol mispalo balayla, kilu shechina kenegdo, midnei shalibo panoi, ve'edo mehaher, b'tzarchei ha'olam, v'hu mispalo b'kavana. So it's a dramatic medrash, which says that we can see from this pasuk something which is essential to the halachic world of tefillah, namely having total focus and deep emotional connection. Now, where are we coming from? We're coming to the world of tefillah from the world of Hesped. So that means that the world of Hesped is a world of deep emotional resonance and the world of really trying to fully engage one subject. There's an enormous onus for those who are generally responsible to be maspid, to really have a hesped, which is generic, is no hesped at all. And it comes from a very deep, 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 deep place of appreciation for what was lost. And that's why hespedim can, and this we'll try to talk about, be very, very beautiful, because it should be a portrait of a person, of a life that was lived, and what animated that person. Of course, that does become very sad to appreciate that that's now lost, but we're trying to focus on the portrait, as it were, that which we're trying to describe. So here, what Chazal are telling us is this language of Roni is really the language of Hesped. So if we can put together what we've seen so far, Yirmiyahu talked about Bechia, Vevke Yomam Valayla, and he also talked about Hesped, Kumi Roni Valayla. And it's that dynamic, that dichotomy, that we'll spend most of, today talking about, and then try to, explain what the relevant connections are. So the tour, again, this is a purely halachic source. The tour was authored by Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Asher. His father was the great Rush. He lived in the 14th century. He was a boy in Germany. This actually becomes part of the story in Kinos. We talk about this. And the family had to run from Germany. The first time that happened was not in the 20th century. The family had to leave Germany because of terrible massacres that were taking place at the end of the 13th century. The Tur's father, the Rush, was the Talmud Mavak, was the greatest student of the Maharam Rutenberg, amongst many great students. The two other leading students were murdered themselves, the Hagos Maimunios, as well as the Mordechai. These are great, great, great Rishonim. For those who study halacha, these people are part of, many, many, many halachic conversations. And the Maharam Rutenberg, I think, is quite famous, died in prison. He wouldn't let the community ransom him. And the only one to survive of this group of Rebbeim and Talmidim was the Rush. And the Rush ran to Spain, a little bit of the geography. So Germany through France, over the Pyrenees. It's a mountain range, and you go into Spain, the Iberian Peninsula, and the first Jewish city that you come to there is Barcelona. In Barcelona, there was a great rabbi, Rabbi Shlomo ben Avraham Adaret, known to history as the Rashba. The Rashba met the Rash and his young children and his family, said, this person knows a lot, and actually really saved the family and got them a position in Toledo as in the Rabbana. So the tour had a remarkable personal history. He spent his earliest years in Germany, and his father then takes the family to Spain. So he grows up really at the intersection between the halachic culture of Ashkenaz and Sfarad, and he's the first one to put together the framework that would become the Shulchan Aruch, right? So he divides Jewish law into four sections of Orach Chaim, Yoredeya, Choshen Mishpat, and Eben HaEzer, and this is another beautiful thing to think about in the context of tragedy, is that this beautiful cross-pollination between his exposure to his father and the world of the Balei HaTosfos that he came from, but also the halachic traditions of Sfarad, was only made possible by tragedy. So this, we should also appreciate that kind of resilience. So he writes the following here, which is so, so, so important in terms of our understanding of what this series is going to be about. So he says, Masachta Sofrim is one of the, what we call Masachtos Ketanos. It's not formally part of Shas, the way that, Brachos, Erpeya, Demai, Bikurim, Shavias are, but it is a text that dates to the period of the early Amoraim, and many, many, many of our halachos about tefillah in particular are taken from Masachas Sofrim. We have Masachas Brachos and Masachas Sofrim. Those are the two major sources for how we know how to daven and how we know how to observe different days. So Masachas Sofrim Kasav Yeshkorim Sefer Kinos Bo'erev. There was a minhag that people would read, of course, Eicha at night. V'yeshem Achron Ad HaBoker La'achar Kriyas Sefer Torah. We, of course, our practice is to read Eicha at night, but there are some communities that would do it in the night. There are some communities that would do it both during the daytime and the nighttime. Sha'achar kriyas sefer Torah, omenu mispalish ba'efer. People would put on ashes. You wouldn't be kavod haTorah to do that while reading from the Torah, while the Torah was being read. Uvigadav mefulashin v'korei bibechia v'yilala. So the way that these would then be read is with crying, with tears. We talked about bechia. And yilala is, again, a form that the Gemara associates with trua, with actually that sound of a certain kind of wailing. So, im yodeh latargama mutav, if you would be able to know the meaning of, kinos wonderful, v'im lav, nos talamishi yodeh latargim, kidei sheyavinu kol ha'am, v'anashim v'atinoko, sh'anashim chayavos, kanashim v'kol shekein, banim zacharim. So, the Torah says something remarkable, and it's really the basis of our minhag today. This is the way it's done in our shul. Growing up, this is all the way I experienced it. Maybe people here have different experiences than I do, but that kinos should be explained, that they should be explained, so people should understand. So either the rabbi or somebody else will explain beforehand, we're about to say such and such kina. This is not a new practice. This goes back to what the Torah is saying, that as much as the crying is important, it's very, very important for people to have a conceptual understanding of what it is that we're talking about. The language can be very formidable, so you have to have an understanding, and it's very hard to do in the moment. So part of, again, the idea of this series is to give us at least a foundation of going into that with a level of understanding. V'shas hakinos asur l'saper davar v'latzeis chutz kidei shelo yafsik libo min ha'evel v'kol shekein shelo lasuach ima ovdei gilulim. So basically what the Torah says is that there shouldn't be any hefsek. There shouldn't be any interruptions. And this isn't Shmoneh Esrei, right, where it's like a formal halachic problem. But what's going on here? It's exactly what we saw in the Medrash. What did the Medrash say? That when it comes to tefillah, we want to have deep kavana. That kinos are really only valuable when a person is deeply connected to them. So if you're going out every 5 minutes, that's really not the idea. This isn't like one is yotzei kinos because you said 10 or 20. It's a certain emotional space that one is supposed to get to. Now, that's a very critical idea. It's about bonding with what's being discussed. And we all know that when we're distracted in 17 different directions, at least for me, it's just very hard to emotionally connect to anything. So just like in the world of tefillah, where kavana is the coin of the realm, so when it comes to kinos, it's extremely important that there shouldn't be a, a hesek chadas, there shouldn't be a hefsek, there shouldn't be interruptions and distractions, because then you're really not achieving very much, is the honest truth. So again, they can be lengthy, and that can be challenging, but this should be the aspiration for everybody. So you see here the tour is really doing justice to both themes. He says, Bechia has its place, but also understanding. Kumi Roni Valaila, he said, Roni Milashon Hespeid, that we're supposed to have an understanding of what it is that we're mourning over, and ultimately, you know, what leads to, you know, what leads to tears and what leads to crying. The Gemara in Brachos tells us that Agra de Hespeida Diluye, that the reward, so to speak, or the essence, if you will, of Hespeid is that it would cause people to cry, that people would feel emotionally moved. If somebody walked away from Hespeid saying, I was there, the person was born in 1932, they passed away in 2023, they were an actuary, they were, you know, they were born in the Bronx, and then they moved to wherever, that would not be a successful Hespeid. A successful Hespeid is measured in the fact that it moves people to Bechia. So here we now have one of the first connections between the world of Hespeid and the world of Bechia, that Hespeid should be a catalyst for Bechia. But again, as we'll see, informed Bechia, not just Bechia from a place of, okay, you know, I'm emotionally wrought or distraught, but I now have a greater understanding of that which was lost, and yes, that really is, you know, very, very, very tragic. And we'll come back to that idea a little bit later. So, taking half a step back, let's talk a little bit about Bechia first, and a particular Agada that's going to lead us to hopefully understand and appreciate one specific Kina that I would like to look at, which I think you know, brings about some of these themes in a very clear way. And then, you know, to go back to that paradigm of Sarah and how I think that sort of casts a giant shadow over all of Kino. So, yeah, please.
I just find the word Roni just a strange word. Although it might be all over Tanakh as crying. But to me, Rina is happiness always.
Right.
So it's interesting how that word specifically was chosen.
Yeah, and you really hit the nail on the head, because we'll see that because that word was chosen, Chazal, I was going to save this for the end, but this is the best kind of, like, spoiler. That's the best. You know, you can't pay enough for these comments. So Chazal understood that there was really a double entendre, that clearly here it means, you know, Shivchi Kamayim Libeach, Roni in the sense of people having an emotive reaction that is, you know, very demonstrative and pained, but that Rina aspect is going to be part of this. So, you know, when I said that there is a silver lining here, I really mean it. And you, okay. I think that Dr. Froelich picked up on one of the threads that we're going to have to come back to. Excellent. Okay.
Can I ask you one point,
please,
before we move on?
Yeah.
I'm really struck by, in source 3, when it says, Kol ha-mishpala ba-layla ki'ilu shechina k'negdo mipnei shalibo panoi. Like, this whole statement, like, how does that come into just like our everyday davening, because most of our everyday davening is daytime related, and we even seek to daven Maariv like as soon as we can. This seems like completely, it's almost like when you're sort of sleepy and it's hard to daven, that's when you can really reach better kavana. How does that interact with our halacha?
Okay, very good. So you guys weren't in cahoots beforehand, right? Okay. All right, so we'll see that those two questions, while seemingly disparate, are actually deeply, okay, deeply integrated.
Okay.
Yeah, that's very good. Okay, so we're gonna get there, because that's part of that secondary meaning of the term Roni, and why nighttime was seen as so ra'ui for whether it was kinos, whether it's tefillah, we'll see, even Limud HaTorah, it's all going to express itself. It's very good. Okay, so a reference to Bechia, probably the most famous one in the first parak of Eicha, is when Yirmiyahu wrote, Al Eila ani vochia, ini ini yardamayim, ki rachak menu minachem meshiv nafshi, hayu vanai shomimim, ki gavar oyev. So, for these I cry, my eyes pour forth water, I have no one to comfort me. Well, basic theme, if we were studying Eicha, maybe there's a class this semester at Lamdeinu at Eicha, but the basic theme of the first parak of Eicha is isolation. And if you count how many times in the first parak, you'll see the term Ein Minachem La Kol Reyeha Bagduba, that there are no friends, everybody's turned against. That's the basic idea. right? So a person in deep distress, crying, and nobody's there to be menachem. Hayu vanai shomimin ki gavar oyev. And again, it's over the loss of the children. Okay, so the Gemara in Masachas Gittin, you know, develops in a very, very, very beautiful way, you know, this theme, and in particular, this pasuk, and this will lead us to the first kina that we'll look at in this series, which really takes the notion of bechia and develops it magnificently, and it's all based on a Gemara, and it assumes we understand the Gemara. So maybe let's look at the Gemara together. The main place, it just happens to be, again, I didn't coordinate this, but for those who are Daf Yomi people here, it's this week's Daf Yomi. Okay, no, it just came out that way. Either way, I would be talking about this, but you know, it's always nice when these things work out. So Tana Rabban Maisa Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya was one of the elite students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. If you remember that story where they snuck Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai out of Yerushalayim to interact with Vespasian, so with those two students, Rabbi Yeshua was one of the two. His formative experience was watching his Rebbe during the Churban. Ma'aser Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya shehalach l'krach gadol shebiromi, he went to Rome. And as we know historically, and as Chazal write about, you know, extensively, you know, there was a massive, massive, massive number, historians debate how many, but thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews were taken into captivity in Rome itself, okay? Including many, many thousands of children. So Amr Lo, so he was told, Tino Gachad Yesh Beveis Asurin, Yefeinayim V'tov Roi Kvuto Sav Seduro Slo Tal Talim. So there's a special child who's being held in one of these places of captivity, literally a prison. You know, I just wanted to point out, it's really amazing when you learn Jewish history, which is always so important to do, you know, how you see so much repeating itself. You know, many people have heard that after the war, so Rav Herzog, amongst others, but was one of the leaders going around, you know, the convents and monasteries of Europe, you know, looking for Jewish children to save them. And some he did and some he couldn't. It's, you know, a very, very complicated time. The Pope at the time ruled, he paskin lahavdil, understandably from his point of view, that any child who was baptized could not be brought out because that would be condemning that child to eternal damnation, whereas the children who hadn't yet been baptized could be returned because, you know, then that would be like more like what we would call a tino kshanishba. It wouldn't really be their fault, but if they're baptized, you can't really hand them back over. So that was then, and then, you know, you have this in the Gemara. So Rabbi Yeshua went for very similar purposes to try to save Jewish children. So he was told about this Jewish child. Okay, so halach amar al pesach beis asum amar mi nasan l'mishisa Yaakov Yisrael levozezim. So who allowed Yaakov and Yisrael to be plundered? Ana oso tinok v'amar, he was able to finish the pasuk, you know, so chidon ha-tanach style. Halo Hashem zuchatanu lo v'lo avu bidrachav haloch v'lo shamu bisaraso. So Amar, this is now Rabbi Yeshua responding. He doesn't know the child, but he knows that the child knows Tanakh. So muftachani bo shemora hora bi Yisrael. Havoda shenuzaz mikan ad shevdenu b'chol mamon sheposkin alav. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya comes to a halachic conclusion here, and he says this child is so such a virtuoso that he will redeem him for any amount of money. The reason that is of like great halachic consequence is that there is a Gemara Masach Gittin and Dafim Hey, which actually tells us that there's an Issur Derabanan to do such a thing. And that there's an Issur Derabanan because we don't want to incentivize people to take more captives, to spend unlimited amounts of money in redemption of captives. So the Bali Atosos point out on the spot, Top Tosos Gittin Dafim Hey and Aleph, the Bali Atosos tell us that it's an exception for somebody who's a great Talmud Chacham or who shows potential to be a great Talmud Chacham. And this Gemara is the source of a very important halacha that there's no holds barred. And that became ad hayom hazeh, part of the major halachic discussion surrounding what happens in Israel, lo aleinu, when soldiers are taken. Is it because the tzibor has a great need for Talmidei Chachamim, and then you could say other needs of the tzibor? So we're not going to get into that right now, but people should know this Gemara isn't just an Agada, but it has great halachic significance. So Rabbi Yeshua paskins that he's going to do whatever it takes. So Amr lo zaz misham ad shebedao b'mamun harbe v'kachava, right? He really spent an enormous amount to get this child out. This is a famous Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, Kohen Gadol, you know, who becomes the great, great figure in the next generation. So I'm Rav Yehuda Merav, Maisa Bivno Vivito Shol Bishmal ben Elisha. This is like, you know, extremely sad from one point of view, that this child, you know, who grew up to be a Moreh HaRav Yisrael, so now we're going to talk about what happened to his children, okay? Shenishbu L'shtei Adonim. So he grew up in captivity and was saved, and if you could imagine, you know, probably, I'm speculating here, but if somebody asked to Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, like, what's your worst nightmare? He'd probably say for his children to be taken into captivity. Very sad. This is what happened. L'yamim nizdavku shneim b'makom echad. Ze omer yesh li'eved she'in kivyofio b'chol ha'olam. Right? That there's nobody as handsome as this boy. Ze omer yesh li'shivcha she'in b'chol ha'olam kulo kivyofia. So amru bovinasi'im zelaze. Let's marry them off to each other. Right? You can think about this from a very transactional point of view. Their thought was that, you know, there's a power to the genetics here, and they would be able to produce very beautiful children. Unechalik bivlados, right? And then they're going to be able to capitalize, to monetize this, right? Because if they have X number of children together, right? So each of these children will become, you know, extremely valuable in a very debased society. We don't have to elaborate. Everybody understands. Hichnisum l'cheder, ze yashva bekeren zavizeh, vizo yashva bekeren zavizeh. Ze omer, ani kohen, this is the boy talking, ben kohanim. That was his comment. Gedolim, es ha-shivcha. Right, we all know from Parshas Amor that there are very strict regulations that apply to a kohen, you know, over and above every member of the Jewish people. Bezos ameres ani kohenes bas kohanim gedolim, right? Enase le'eved, and she, you know, thought about it from her point of view, right? That it, from each of their point of view independently, without obviously understanding exactly what was going on just yet, right? They, you know, were aghast at the idea of betraying their family tradition. Uvachu kol halayla. Again, here's where Bechiah comes up. They cried. Okay, Ariel, you were very focused on this, rightly? All night long, okay? So they cried all night. They were both weeping. Okay, so Kevan Sha'alam Budashachar, exactly that period that we were talking about, right? As night is turning into morning. The Rosh Hashmaros. So Hikiru Zezeh, V'naflu Zelzeh, V'go B'Bechiah, Ad She'yatza Nishmasan. So they literally cried in each other's arms, brother and sister, until they passed away. V'alehen konin Yirmiyahu al eile anivochia. These were the ones that Yirmiyahu was alluding to. Eini, eini, yardamayim. Okay, so this was, you know, immortalized. This agada was immortalized in the 23rd kina, which we'll take a look at, you know, certain sections. But I just want to highlight again what I was talking about before. The I don't have to, you know, say that there's immense tragedy here, but there's also something extraordinarily beautiful in this agada, which is the deep, you know, love between a brother and a sister, that you know, fraternity, that filial piety, you know, that existed. Not only that, but that each of them independently, even before they realized the plight of their brother and sister, which is very beautiful. What do we want as parents more than for our children to love and take care of each other? The spiritual resilience, the idea that what they were lamenting was not, I thought I was going to grow up to be, you know, whatever, you know, a cardiologist, and here I ended up in captivity, and she said, you know, I thought I was going to be whatever, and, you know, but that their loyalty to their family Masora, like, that is extraordinary. That is something which is really important to take stock of. That is truly beautiful. That here you have, you know, a young boy and a young girl, you know, who, you know, are thinking about this in terms of, you know, the halachic, you know, implications, their relationship with Torah and their relationship with halacha, their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so
understanding the Gemara from before, who their father was, which, you know, I read this kind of every year. I never knew that Gemara connection.
I didn't know.
So I think that just it makes the tragedy even more intense. Also, the understanding of how long the Jews, it was through generations that they were being kidnapped, they were being suffering. It wasn't just, you know.
It's exactly, I think that's why it's so valuable to spend time doing this. Again, you know, with all of the, I think that there's like you just said, it's, you know, it's really critical. So Let me start. We'll try to get through as much of the 23rd Kina as we possibly can, because I think that there's so much profundity here in terms of the way the story is told. So this is, again, we have it as the 23rd Kina, the way that most of our Kinos work. Forgive me, the enumeration is somewhat Ashkenazic-centric. But that's the way that I think most of us will probably see it. So it's called this Navi Chatasi Hishmima. So what that literally translates to is the Naveh is the Beis HaMikdash. Zeh Keli V'Anveihu, the Gemara in Shabbos, Kof Lamed Gimel says, V'Anveihu is Evna Lo Beis HaMikdash, the beautiful place. My sins destroyed. V'Dimasi Alechi Azrima, right? V'dimasa alechiya. That's a reference to Pasuk in Eicha. This is going to be a lot about crying. Uviyom zenihi v'niya rima. I will raise my voice in crying. V'ahima miyamim yamim. And on an annual basis, you know, I will, cry on this particular day. So the kina, you know, started off on this general note, but then sort of focuses in. Valev v'nichum chadal chadol. There is no consolation. And mikol ke'ev tziri nivdal badol. I'm totally separated from any possibility of healing. Albein ubas Rabbi Yishmael kohen gadol. Right, for the son and daughter. Now we know of Rabbi Yishmael the kohen gadol. Zichram yikod b'vavi asima v'ahima miyamim yamima. That's the refrain, the beautiful refrain, poetic refrain that I will remember their particular story. So this is something that I really wanted to pause for a moment and draw attention to. So we start off with this, you know, very generic topic, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but from there and there we zero in on the person or on individual stories. This was the genius, you know, to put it in somewhat modern terms, of the names but not numbers idea. That is not a new idea. That's an idea that Kinos is all about. Names, not numbers. Don't tell me about the Beis HaMikdash. Tell me about a boy and a girl. Tell me about a brother and a sister. Tell me about that. We want to appreciate that. We want to understand. So now, in poetic terms, you already know the Gemara, but see how the poem amplifies the Gemara in an extraordinary way. So, Eis nishbu v'naflu lishnei adonim, right? They were taken into captivity to two masters. V'hem shchinim zelu mazachonim. And these two masters, you didn't get this in the Gemara, are neighbors, right? So, like, you know, these are people, you know, that they hang out with each other, they know each other, and, you know, that they're having, like, this water cooler kind of discussion. V'yisapr zelu za inyanim, right? They would talk in general, like, you know, They talked about what was going on, you know, in the town. They talked about what was going on, presumably, with their they talked in a casual way. And this was just one of those things that came up. For us, the greatest of tragedies. For them, like, you know, the morning discussion. And they got together at the bus stop, or whatever it was, wherever people talked to their neighbors. Ze amar mishivyas tzionim shavisi shivcha lechusha shanim kilvana beziv uklaster panim uvezor kekitziya v'yimima v'ahima miyamim miyamima. So this one is the one who has the girl. Re'ehu siper lo b'kiflayim. So his friend says, you know, double. Vani ba mishvi Yerushalayim. I came, you know, from the slave markets of Jerusalem. Shavisi eved yefeinayim. Keshemesh b'sokvo eis tzarayim. V'sor eis mana hishlima. V'ahima miyamim yamima. So they both speak again in the most, you know, laudatory terms about the physical appearance of this each of their avadim, respectively. Bon unizdavgam v'nachalka b'nosayim. And for them, again, there's no humanity. It's all about, you know, the capitalizing, monetizing. Bivlados kemo kochve shamayim. The children will be even more beautiful. L'shem azos titzalna aznayim. To hear this makes our ears ring. Zos es madaya frima. It will cause me to tear my clothing. V'ahima miyamim yamima. So I just wanted to point out here, there's something so subtle but so profound. When we talk about the idea of tearing one's clothes, the most dramatic image of that, of course, that we have in all of Tanakh is in the context of the Kohen Gadol, right? That we're told that the Kohen Gadol isn't able to do what? Right? This is what happens to Aaron when his two children are taken from him and his two children die. And he's told, Vigdechem lo sifromo, that you're not allowed to tear your clothes, right? So now what the Kina has done is remarkable. You know, we read up until now, I don't want to say with blinders on, but normally we learned the Gemara in Gittin, it was horrible, and you have a Kohen Gadol who's losing his children in this intergenerational way, right? And like I said, it probably would have been his worst nightmare to think about. And the Kina says, okay, but this isn't the first time a Kohen Gadol is losing two children. And that the Kohen Gadol isn't in the position to mourn over that. But what do we know from the Chumash? We know that even though Aaron couldn't mourn, what was said? V'achichem kol beis Yisrael yivku es hasreifa asher saraf Hashem. That it's our responsibility to cry. And now we're going to cry for Aaron. We're going to cry for the Kohen Gadol. We don't see Yishmael ben Elisha in just some vacuum. We see that he's a Kohen Gadol in the history of Kohanim, who's losing two children in this very, you know, there's no words for it. And, you know, we're going to be there to tear our clothes. We're going to be there to weep. Yeah, please. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm a Tanakh person.
Yes.
So, like, I never noticed this before. I've read this 1,000 times. The story of Shmuel. Eli has two sons. The Miyamim Yamima is the key word of the story. The Allah Ishahu Meiro Miyamim Yamima. And it appears over and over again. And that's exactly it. Eli has two sons who are evil and who are ultimately killed. And he's the Kohen Gadol. And I think that's sort of underscoring the subtext.
Okay, so this, again, the best kind of spoiler. because, did you see that? I was going to take the next...
It comes from there. Yeah. It's also in the Torah. The Yamim Yamim appears four times in the Torah. For Yom Tovim, actually. And then I think it appears in the story of Yiftach when his daughter dies. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how they celebrate
the 4 days year. Of crying. Right?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And they use the word Miyamim Yamima, which is, I'm assuming, right. You know, one of those like ironic contrast mm-hmm. kind of things. And then it appears here, which is sort of more similar mm-hmm. to the Torah, but I think it's fascinating.
Okay, perfect. So just to prove the Dean's point, that now we get to the next Kohen Gadol in the story, which is the Kohen Gadol of Eli, who lost two sons. Now again, Chafni and Pinchas had more culpability in that situation. But did people notice that line of L'shem Azos Titzalna Oznayim? What's that a reference to?
Story, yeah.
Okay, so when Eli is given the curse, he's told by the Malach, Ishadokim, that anybody who hears this, that literally their two ears are going to ring. That's a very clear indication that that's what we're talking about. So again, what we're trying to do here is to try to say this tragedy is part of a much longer story. It's particular, but the what happened to the children, the two children of this Kohen Gadol, connect back to the children of the original Kohen Gadol, to the suffering of Eli, the Kohen Gadol, and that klala, that curse, of course, is a big, you know, part of this. Okay, so he's, and like I said, you know, when we read this, you know, the depth is so profound, you know, you could really appreciate why the Rav was hesitant to, you know, say that we could do these things in this generation. We feel good when we can just identify the pieces, you know, the component parts. Okay, so Yiskimu Alzo Shnei Am Yachad, they came to this agreement. La Erev Zivgum Becheder Echad, V'Adonim Yibachotz, Libam ke'echad, right? So they're like, you know, plotting outside and they can't be, you know, more happy with what they've come up with, right? Ve'heim bochim b'mar nefesh v'fachad, and they're weeping, right? Al eila anivochia, the bechi is the theme, ad boker b'chiasam lo hidmima, right? That word lo hidmima, v'yidom, aharon, right? So their cries could not be stifled, v'ahima miyamim yamima, ze yispod b'chel levav yimsa, Nin Aharon, the descendant of Aaron, Eich Shivcha Yehi Nosei. How could he possibly marry a Shivcha? Vehi Gamhit Yalel Besigrashosa Bas Yocheved Eich Leeved Tinase. We know that Yocheved, that is the mother of the Bate Kahuna, the Bate Levia. So top of the next page. Oi Kizos Gazaro Mervyose Lezos Yivku Ash Kisil Vechima Vehima Miyamim Yamima. So again, this is the gzeira of the one who is Omer Veosa, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, makes these decrees. All we can do is cry over this incredible loss. Or Boker, Ariel, back to you. Zed, Zeh, Kihikiru, they, with the light of the morning coming in, they recognized Hoyach v'hoyachos hikberu. They saw it was their brother or sister, respectively. V'nischabku yachad v'nischabaru ad yata nishmasam b'nishima. They literally b'nishima achas in one breath. V'ahima miyamim yamima. L'zos yakonin yirmiya b'shia gizera zos ani tomid bochia. So this is now a reference to the Gemara. The Gemara said the pasuk in Eicha al Eila anivochia is about this. So this is what Yirmiyahu was talking about. Uvi yikad yikod uchvia al ben ubas misped rav atzima. But it's not just bechi; it's misped. It said v'ahima miyamim yamima arid besichi v'ahima v'kol nihi arima. Okay, so I think we can appreciate that in the context of the kinos, which have the more panoramic historical perspective, what was a local story, tragic as it was, becomes, a bit part of the fabric of Jewish history, ranging from Aaron to Eli the Kohen Gadol, the Nin Aharon, with everything that entails. Okay, so like I said, I think I just wanted to prove this, bring this as almost like a proof of concept that when we do our work, we do our homework, as it were, we can get a lot more out of these things, and not just the tragic dimensions, but in particular, I think some of the really beautiful aspects, as well, of the story. To get back to... Yeah, please, Jerry.
Yamim Yamima, you're saying that this is a continuous story from Kohanim,
right,
from Aaron and down Eli, right, and then...
Right, and in the immediate context, when it comes up in this story in Sefer Shmuel, it means that Elkanah used to come up miyamim yamima, that he would come on an annual basis. Yeah. And so what we're saying is that, instead of being able to be like Ola L'Regel miyamim yamima, here we have, to cry over miyamim yamima on an annual basis. Okay, so... The medrash that we talked about before, which Ariel was really keying in on, actually is part of a much bigger story, and I would like to use that to expand out, now. We mentioned the idea of Kumi Roni Valaila L'Rosh Hashmuros, that word of Roni, which means to, have this emotive, powerfully emotive, painful experience, also touches on the term rina of joy, and we'll see that developed here. And Ariel was picking up on that Dr. Proch was noting, Ariel was picking up on the idea of the timing being very significant. So there's a Gemara in Tamid that the Rambam really latched onto. The Gemara in Tamid on the Flamid Beis, which happens to be the very end. Tana Rabbi Chia kol osik batora balayla shchina kenegdo. Shenemar kumi roni valayla l'rosh ashmuros shchifchi kamayim libeich nochach pnei Hashem. So in the Medrash it was tefillah. In the Gemara, it's Torah. And the Rambam paskind, Avo pisha mitzvah lulmod by yomu v'alayla, in adam lomed rov chachmaso ela balayla. So even though, of course, there's a mitzvah to learn Torah all the time, rov chachma comes at night. Lefikach misharatza liskos bekeser Torah, yizar b'chol lilosa v'lo yi'abir afilo echad mehen b'shena v'achila shesia v'sicha v'chayotze v'halal b'talmud Torah v'divrei chachma, Amr Chacham Min Rina Shal Torah Ela Balayla Shenemar Kumi Roni Valayla. So of course we understand that the pasuk in its original form means to be Nochach Pnei Hashem, to be rendezvousing with Hashem in this extremely pained way. But as Dr. Froelich was noting, right, that term, its intentional ambiguity of Rina, Lishmal Harina Vila Tfila, in the Medrash, there's focusing on Tfila. Here, in the Gemara and Tamid, developing it in terms of Limud HaTorah, the point is that it's a term associated with deep emotional bonding. So like we said before about, kinos, that one doesn't want a Hesei Chadas, the idea of nighttime here now becomes, I think, very well understood. Unfortunately, it's not true for us anymore. I wish I could change it. I don't think I can. But it used to be that people used to come home at night, right? And, they would close the door. Sometimes the phone would ring, but usually not too much after 9 unless there was a real emergency. And then, you would, there would be, actually something called quiet. And people would, be able to do things like talk to their family members and, think every now and again. This actually happened, just wanted to point out this, sounds like it's made up, but it did, this actually would go on. Seems strange. But and that was, the Rambam understood that this was a time the spiritual value of which could not be in any way underestimated. And especially as it came to bonding to Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, when that night framework provided a really enormous opportunity, and we never wanted to really lose out on that. So again, whether it's an intense emotional experience of tefillah, of limud haTorah, or even in this context of you know, expressing one's deep pain, there's nothing like the night when one doesn't have that hesei chadas, you know, for these for these experiences. And Ariel, to your point before, it's absolutely true that the formal halachic structure of tefillah required what we call erev boker v'tzarayim asicha, that you know we want tefillos at all periods of morning, afternoon, and evening. The idea of sort of rendezvousing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really very much a nighttime theme. David HaMelech, the first Agada and Shas, and Brachos talk about David HaMelech getting up at at Chatzos Laila Akum Lahodos L'Shmecha. The idea of bonding, which is uniquely possible, in the nighttime. So that I think is a really important. Yeah, please, Susan.
If you look at it scientifically, also, and doctors will tell you that the nighttime is when your body is really more aware of everything that's going on. And that's why you feel achy more at night, or you have headache more at night, because your body is very in tune. In the quietness of the nighttime, that's when the body becomes even more awoken and aware of what's going on.
That's a very, very, very good, that awareness then can be spiritually directed. So just to conclude, I want to make one last observation. I was hoping to read the Nitziv inside, but it's not absolutely essential to do so. It just, the point will be made in either case. This, I heard first from my Rebbe, from Rav Rosenzweig, in the name of the Rav. It is written up. If you look in, they compiled some of the Rav's comments, on Avelos in a work called Out of the Whirlwind. So it's actually written up there. But the Rav made the following observation, which is actually made by the Nitziv as well, though the Nitziv, if you're interested, you take a look on your own time. I don't want to take people's time. Develops the idea in a different way, but there's a strange feature to the pasuk of Lispod Lisara Velivkosa, because normally we would expect Bechia to come before Hesped, right? So, normally there's a, what the Gemara describes, people pass away, and there's what we call a Shas Chimum, which halachically is when you're supposed to tear kriya, where people feel emotionally wrought, and then you try to get your thoughts together. How many times have all of us been to Hespedim, where the first line is, I'm going to try to get my thoughts together, because it is hard, right? And we're trying to transition from that bechi to Hesped. So the Rav noted that, and then it notes that in his own way and takes it a slightly different direction. But the Rav said there was something about Zara Yemenu that was distinctive, and that is that the more Hesped there was, Hesped, again, which we talked about being a conceptual appreciation without a hesei chadas to really understand who the person was, that led to a much greater bechia. Agra de hespeda diluye, because when you really understood who Sara Yemenu was, so much of which was hidden, hinei ba'ohel, right, that she was a person like an iceberg, you could only see 2% over the surface. Some of it, there was so much hatznei alechas to her that it would only come out, and their only part, after her passing. So the Rav said that was the idea of Hesped by Sarah, gave people the tools to have a proper Bechia. And that really, really, really is the story of the interaction between Bechi and Hesped that we're going to try to tell. When we understand what happened to the children of Yishmael ben Elish, right? It's bad enough they were taken in captivity. We all agree that would be something to be very upset about. And it's bad enough for, but the idea that their father was taken into captivity, and the idea that there's this tragic history going back to Aaron HaKohen of, losing children and not being able to fully mourn over it, right? And the idea of, us stepping in to cry, V'acheichem kol beis Yisrael, yivku es asreifa, asher saraf Hashem. I think we can understand why understanding the Hesped and having more information and more context can lead to a greater Bechia. But again, not a Bechia in the sense of just being, very despairing, but you're crying because you appreciate the beauty. You appreciate the beauty of the kahuna and the attachment these children had to that. You appreciate the idea that you know, the spiritual resilience, how they didn't want to betray that halachic tradition. You appreciate what their father, what his childhood had been like, and you know how Rabbi Yeshua went to go get him. And like I said, you start thinking about, you know, Rav Herzog going around trying to get the children, and how we're all so deeply interwoven in Jewish history, and what's old is new and what's new is old. And you know, I think that's really the goal of this. And like I say, it's not meant to be depressing for depressing's sake. It's meant to give us an understanding and appreciation of how deeply we belong to Jewish history, you know, and how much these stories continue, you know, to play themselves out, you know, in our generation. So God willing, you know, we'll have the opportunity over the next few weeks to try to, you know, give as much justice as we can to each of the stories that we'll present from the Kinos based on the Tanakh, and always in this spirit of Kinos and Hesped leading to Bechia. Nobody has to cry at the end each week, but building up to Tisha B'Av of the Yom Bechi, that we should appreciate what was lost and the beauty that was lost. And, you know, like I say, you know, Tisha B'Av properly observed leads to really enormous joy, in the sense of being really proud of the tradition that we come from, and, you know, great hope, as we'll discuss as we go forward, and the idea that all of that beauty will, you know, reveal itself in the full measure of time. So thank you all so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.